Our scoreboard update, and in the Europa League this morning, we saw Celtic unfortunately go down against Bayer Leverkusen 3-2. West Ham beat Rapid Vienna 2-0. And those games in action at the moment, Rangers lead Sparta Prague 2-0. Coming up, well, he was a fan favourite, still is. Great media career since, obviously, his playing career. Played 12 tests and 38 one-day internationals from 1981. To 1993, the host of Sydney Weekender, who dares wins? Who could forget him being the referee on Gladiators as well? Good morning, Mike Whitney. How are you?
Hey, Jared. How you going, mate? Hello, Lyles. Hello, Pup.
Whit, how
Hello,
are
buddy.
You, my friend?
Good, mate. How are you?
Mate, we're great. And it's great to have you on the show. And I want to start, actually. I know you're a proud South Sydney boy, so you're a life member at the Bunnies. Have you got over the grand final yet?
Oh, always disappointing to lose a grand final. You know, we'd played pretty well to get in there. I think our grand final was the week before. The ball just went our way in that sort of grand final decider type thing to get into the grand final. And then it just didn't go our way sort of in the grand final. But, yeah, disappointing. But, you know, that's the way it goes. We'd rather be playing in the grand final than not making it. So look forward to next year.
Whit, lovely to speak to you, buddy. Mate, good timing as well. We're doing a lot of talking to club coaches and grade cricketers at the moment on this show, and it's been really nice to spend a bit of time hearing their thoughts and seeing the guys back playing grade cricket. Mate, you are as loyal as they come when we talk about how important club cricket is, and I'm really keen to get your thoughts on where you see the game of cricket right now, and do you still believe grade cricket and club cricket has that significance and importance?
Oh, absolutely, Pup. I mean, I always talk and have been a big fan of trying to get the first-class players and test players back into playing test cricket. In my day, when I got into first grade in 1979...
A couple of years ago?
I know, yeah. I know, mate. It's unbelievable when I think about that. But look, when I... Every Sheffield Shield player, every test player, they all came back. They all played. There were times in my cup first year of playing first grade for Randwick that you'd play an opposition side and they had two or three of those players. We had Alan Turner, Ron Crippen, John Dyson, and a couple of us went on to play Sheffield Shield cricket. And you just learnt so much from those guys. You learnt everything about the game, and it prepared you if you were lucky enough to play for New South Wales. I know the program's much heavier for the international players and the first-class players. There was no T20 in my day, all this sort of stuff. So I'm a big advocate of that, but grade cricket is so important. I made the decision when I retired in 1994 to go back to clubland, and I went back to sort of Randwick and got on the committee there, and then 21 seasons ago, we merged with Petersham Marrickville to create Randwick Petersham. And they asked me to be the president. And jokingly, I said I'd do it for a couple of years. I've been the president for 21 years now. And not too many are holding their hand up to take the job off me. But look, I just thought it was important that I went back and with the new club as well, Randwick Petersham, tried to have a bit of stewardship over that to try and direct the club in the right way and put the right foundations in the ground, and we've been fairly successful. But again, there's always something to do. You know, there's always trying to encourage the players. Of course, we're trying to get a female team in the competition as well. So that's adding another string to our bow. And hasn't the girls' game just gone up like a rocket into the sky? I mean, just amazing watching the girls play. So yes, big advocate for club and grade cricket, and it should be your preparation for moving into the first-class scene.
Where did it all start for you, mate? Or how did it all start? And when did you realise that you had some ability then? You thought, oh, geez, I can make a career out of this.
Well, I've got to tell you, mate, I was a rugby league tragic and I played until I was 20. And that was really my first preference. I grew up in Matraville, which is a suburb behind Maroubra Beach. Yep. And that's in the heart of Rabbitohs territory. My father was an old mascot East Lakes person, again, heart of Rabbitohs territory. So from a very young age, my sister were indoctrinated into the Rabbitohs family, and we've been like that ever since. Plus, around where I was living, Georgie Piggins lived around there, Ronnie Coote lived around there, John O'Neill and Gary Stevens were builders. They had a building business, and you would see them around the local suburbs working on houses. And my old man would come home. He was a truck driver out at Boral Oil Refinery, and he'd say, I know Lurch O'Neill and Steve are working on a house in Chifley, and I'd jump in the car and we'd drive past the place just to look at them working on the house. So that was my love. There was a lot of sport around my area, and we played rugby league in the winter, cricket in the summer, and went down the beach at Maroubra and spent a lot of time down there surfing. It wasn't until I was 17 and I'd been playing cricket on the mats in the South Sydney Juniors competition just with my mates. And I dusted up a couple of people on the mats, getting a bit quicker. And this one guy I didn't know, he's an older gentleman. He played first grade for Randwick and made double centuries in first grade. And he rang the secretary of Randwick Cricket Club and said, there's a 17-year-old maniac with the afro, the big afro, running around in the juniors, and you should ring him up. Anyway, this guy, Lyle Gardner, started ringing my house, and I was going down the beach on Saturday morning, surfing and playing cricket in the Arvo. And one morning, I was 10 minutes late from leaving, and my mum answered the phone, and Lyle Gardner, this gentleman, again asked someone had pulled out of a fourth grade game. There was only four grades in those days. And my mother said, you'll go and play this game. This Mr. Gardner won't ring the house again. So I got on my bike and pedalled up to Snake and played a fourth grade game. Took 4 for 16.
My God.
And that moment, that fourth grade game changed my whole perception of cricket. I'd played very few games on turf wickets. Everybody was in long whites. It was really, even though it was only fourth grade, it was really formal and really professional to me that everybody had long whites, long sleeve shirts, you know, jumpers, spikes on, we're playing on turf. And that moment changed my game, my mind. So I played a few more years of rugby league and then got really serious about the cricket when I sort of got into second and first grade.
We're talking to Mike Whitney, who's our Friday legend. And, well, we're ahead with the Ashes series. Yeah. And you made your test debut in, what, the fifth test in Manchester in 1981. So tell us the process then of, I guess, getting onto that tour and making your debut.
I'd actually debuted for New South Wales the season after I played my first grade season, which was a whirlwind. I'd had a great first season for Randwick and got in the state squad and found myself in the side. So I played four Shield games, I think three Shield games and a touring game against New Zealand. But like most cricketers in those days, wanted to go to England and play Lancashire League. And some of my mates had played up in the Northern League in Lancashire around Blackpool and hooked me up with this club. So I went there to play for Fleetwood. Out of nowhere, about a third of the way through the season, I had another mate from Newcastle, Greg Geese, who I was in the stateside with. He was on a scholarship at Gloucester, and a couple of their quicks had been injured, and they were looking for someone to fill in for a few games. And one of those quicks was the great South African Mike Proctor. So I went down and trialled with Gloucester, and they actually signed me up, and I played a few first-class games with them. The tour was on. The Ashes tour was on. It was a great tour. It ended up being called Botham's Ashes. And just prior to the fifth test, I get this phone call. I'm playing for Gloucester, and this voice says to me on the phone, you've been picked, because I knew Jeff Lawson and Rod Hogg were under an injury cloud because I'd followed the series. I was in England. It was an amazing series to be watching. That's where Beefy went crazy at Headingley, and Bob Willis took Aitfer, and all these amazing things were happening. So this bloke on the phone says, you're being picked for the test match. Grab your gear, leave Cheltenham and come to Manchester. And I told him to F off. Because I thought it was a G-up. I thought it was a mate of mine G-ing up, and hung the phone up. He rang back and he went, this is Fred Bennett, the manager of the Australian cricket team. Yeah, and, you know, leave now. Mind you, Malcolm Marshall was bowling for Hampshire and taking shreds off us. So I was pretty happy to get the pads off and get in their car and drive to Manchester. And I debuted the next day in the fifth test at Old Trafford, which was, again, it was like a dream. It was surreal. It was surreal. So that changed my life as well. That very moment changed my whole life.
What about that era of cricket and, you know, Australia going through some tough periods? And again, we sit here right now talking about who's going to be the next Australian captain and how important, you know, that role, how significant that role is in any you know, certainly in any Australian or first-class cricket team. But for you to play under, you know, guys like Alan Border, what, how important was that for you? And did you see the Australian captain, you know, in that esteem that we sit here and talk about how important it is to pick the right person?
Oh, absolutely. And my captain for those first two tests was Kim Hughes.
Yeah.
And when I actually got to Manchester, Fred Bennett, the manager, have said, come straight up to this particular room, room 252, and I'll meet you there. And I went up there and knocked on the door, opened the door, and Fred was there. And I actually knew Fred from Sydney. He was from the Balmain Cricket Club. He was on New South Wales Cricket Association board. He might have been the chairman, actually. And Kim Hughes was sitting in the room. And I'd only met him once in a game I was 12th man in Sydney against Western Australia. And I went, oh. And I said, oh, Kim, I didn't know whether to call him captain or bow or do whatever, because they were held in that esteem. I mean, and, you know, the captain before him was Greg Chappell and Ian Chappell. I mean, these guys were just absolute legends. And to Kim's credit, and I've always thanked him for this, he said to me, this is going to be a big deal because you're playing tomorrow. And I looked at him and went, what? He said, we've got enough people to carry the drinks, mate. We're taking a third seamer into this game and you're going to be bowling first change after Dennis Lilly and Terry Alderman take ball. Well, DK was God. And Rod Marsh was playing. And so, and he said to me at that moment, anything you need ever 24/7 while you're with this side, I'm available. You ring me, you talk to me, anything you need. So that was great. And he was absolutely fantastic to me. I played in that test match, took 2-2. We lost that game, which was a bummer, and actually lost the Ashes. But they kept me on with the tour. Played a couple of first-class games, a one-dayer, and then we played the sixth test at the Oval, and I played in that game as well. And Dirk Wellham, my New South Wales teammate, debuted in that game and made 100 on debut. So it was a whirlwind, amazing season which changed my life. But Kim Hughes was fantastic. Pup, you mentioned Alan Border.
Yeah.
Oh, man, by the time I got to play under Alan, he was just a legend, tough, uncompromising. Look, when I played under Alan and I spent sort of the back end of the 80s and the early 90s till I retired, in and out of the side, but I played in the World Cup in 92 and a lot of one-day games, all under Alan. He was injured once and I played one game under Mark Taylor. But, mate, if Alan had said to any of us in the team, jump up, we instantly would have gone how high and how many times.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, look, Michael, you captained Australia in, what, 47 tests, I think? You know what it's like. You've got to be the boss. Yeah. You've got to be tough. You've got to be resilient. You've got to deal with the press. You've got to deal with life. You've got to have support around you. Moving on to who's going to be the new captain. Wow, what a big job. What a time to come in to captain the side. Is it going to be Patrick? Is it going to be Stephen? Does Stephen really want to do it again? I mean, he's free now to just go out and play. We've never had fast bowlers as captains in this country. That'd be a first for Patrick. It's a really big moment for Australian cricket.
What's the biggest challenge he would face with? You're a former fast bowler. Like, Pat Cummins, the captain, versus Pat Cummins, the bowler, just worrying about his bowling, trying to combine the two. How difficult in your mind would that be?
Very, very, for me, very tough. I just needed to focus and concentrate on my game and my role and my position in the side and make sure that I do that. The captain's across everything. I mean, and I think traditionally we haven't had fast bowlers as captains because, you know, we need to really concentrate on what we're doing. And it's always just been a batsman. But I don't know why. I mean, I'd love to see Paddy break that mould because he's a gun fast bowler. He's a leader. He has the respect of everybody. Every time you see him interviewed, he speaks really well. And he's the sort of bloke you want to throw up there. But traditionally, no, we've just let the fast bowlers and the bowlers do their thing and not get involved. But I mean, look, we're always talking to the skipper about field placings and when am I coming back on and how many overs do you want me to bowl and how the wicket's going and all that sort of stuff. So you're really involved in the game all the time. But it's, look, Michael, you were the captain. How big a job is it?
Yeah, it is weird. It's
I mean,
tough.
You're on 24/7, aren't you?
Yeah, seriously. You are. And but that's my point. It's tough for whoever gets it. It's a full-time role, whether you're a batsman, whether you're a bowler. And these days, I believe you're seeing batsmen get injured just as much as bowlers. So I don't think it should matter what your role is in the team. If you're the best leader and the right leader, then you should get the opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. It's just this thing we've had about the fast bowlers.
Yeah, I know.
And it's just, that's why it's created a lot of conversation about Paddy. I'd love to see him get the tick, but I want to say this too, boys. It doesn't matter which one gets it. They're a New South Wales blue bagger.
And I love it.
Wonderful for us.
We'll talk about New South Wales, Whit. Tell me about some of the sledges you may have... Well, you wouldn't have copped too many on the SCG, but like the Barmy Army when you were playing over there in England. What were they like? I mean, they weren't as established then, I suppose, as they are now, but you still would have copped plenty.
Copped plenty. That first test match, I remember very well at Old Trafford, and where I was playing Fleetwood, that was in Lancashire as well. It was about an hour's drive north of Manchester. So when I rang the people back at Fleetwood to tell them I'd been picked in this test match, half of Fleetwood came down to Old Trafford the next day to watch me debut, which was wonderful. But I remember fielding on the fence and got told, I'm going to say it again, F off back to Fleetwood. plenty of time. You know, what's going on with your hair? they sang all day, and they were... Oh, look, the English are a very generous crowd, but they love us and them, love playing. Over there, you just cop it. Now they send the army over here to bag us, which is so crazy. But it was just a wonderful time. And look, as I said, that series ended up being Botham's ashes. And it's gone down in history for what Beefy did. He was captain for the first couple of games and got nothing and was out of form. So they sacked him and bought Mike Brearley in, and all of a sudden Beefy got a new lease of life and carved us up. And I feel quite humbled and privileged to think that I played two tests in Botham's ashes. It's crazy.
Yeah, you played with some absolute legends and against some superstars. Who's the best you played with and against?
Oh, gee, pup, that's a big question. Look, I'll go the against first. I had the great privilege of playing a number of games against that great West Indian side. It's hard to go past Viv. I mean, you know, in his prime, which went for a long time, he was just so destructive. You know, he was a power hitter with a bat compared today was just a matchstick. And he was still, you know, people say to me things like this now, if Viv was playing nowadays with these bats, I go, mate, there was no ground that could have held him. He would have pumped them out of the ground over the stand. Don't worry about just over the fence. And he was so dominating. The moment he walked out of the gate onto the field, he had that swagger. He's chewing the gum. And he never wore a lid, ever. I've asked him about that. He said, Witta's never owned a helmet. don't worry about never wore one. Never, ever had one in the kit. On top of that, there was Greenwich and Haynes at the top of the order, Richie Richardson, and Brian Lara came later. And these guys were just unbelievable.
Who'd want to be a bowler, Witt?
Oh, mate, it was... Look, you know, it was... You were worried about getting one in the forehead from the straight drive if you've got one up. That's how hard they hit the ball. So, look, that was an amazing place. Plus, they had that array of fast bowlers, which was just scary but amazing to watch. Michael, Malcolm, Joel Garner, Patrick Patterson, and then the list of 20 other guys that couldn't make the side that would have made any test side in the world. Best players I've played with? Oh, mate. Look, I played just in a New South Wales side a number of times that had Slater and Tubby at the top, Stephen and Mark Waugh, Michael Bevan. I mean, just, you know, Mo Matthews, you know, Henry and myself bowling, and Brad McNamara or Trevor Bayliss. Or, I mean, just unbelievable Sheffield Shield sides. And then you get in the test side, and you're just playing with another level. Look, one of my favourite players to play with in all that time, and we were great mates, was Dean Jones. Dean changed the game. People talk about Dino and his one-day credentials. He changed one-day cricket, and Michael Bevan upped the ante very quickly as well with one-day cricket. But, mate, Dean made double centuries in Test cricket. Dean was just an unbelievable player. His energy, his love of the game. He just wanted to play and play and play and play. And I really enjoyed playing with Dino. But look, to play with Steve and Mark, I mean, if you don't know they're brothers and twins, you wouldn't even know they were related. Two really different styles, unbelievable cricketers. I mean, Mark was just, if you saw Mark score 40, it was the best 40 you've ever seen, ever. So and then he'd take three catches in the slips that no one would have ever got a hand on. Then in his early days, he was quick as a seamer. Then he started bowling offies. I hate these people that can do everything. And you didn't take the war boys on in golf, in tennis, anything with a ball, you didn't take them on. But they were just great players. We mentioned AB. I mean, I played with Merv and Billy McDermott. They were high-class fast bowlers. It was just a pleasure to be in those teams.
Well, you're a batsman, which you saved the Test match against New Zealand for us.
I'm still reminding Sir Richard every time I see him, and it's one of the greatest days in my life because my batting average was like 5 or 6, and he was one of the greats of all time. And I've actually done a few speaking gigs with him, and that's been mentioned, and he genuinely says, because I said, the first time he said it, I said, did you really mean it? He said, it's the most disappointing day in his Test cricket life, because he just thought 100% he was going to knock Billy McDermott or me over. They were going to win the Test. It would have been a one-all draw then, and they would have retained the Trans-Tasman Cup. Well, and he never got us out. So every time I see him, I just wave, and he just puts his hands in his face and just ducks the head, goes, stop it, widow. It was 1987. I go, I'll remind you forever, Sir Richard, don't worry.
And as you should. And you took to your media career after your playing career like a duck to water. And have you got a favourite yarn, I guess, from being on tour with Sydney Weekender or behind the scenes with Who Dares Wins and Gladiators? What's one of your favourite memories from working on those shows?
Look, I've been at the Seven Network now for 27 years. I just cannot believe that all that time's gone. And all that time I've done Sydney Weekender. But early doors, there was Who Dares Wins and Gladiators. They were at the cutting edge of reality TV. There'd been no shows ever made or produced like that. And it set up reality TV, really. I'm really sorry for some of the stuff that's on there now, because it's pretty ordinary. But it was cutting-edge stuff. The thing with Who Dares Wins was, if you remember, there was a $50 dare, then there was like a mini dare, then there was a main dare. And the main dare was a really big deal where we'd go and grab someone and throw them up a crane and they were frightened of heights or whatever it may be. We found very quickly that what was a really big deal in season one was now a $50 dare on the street. So it just kept upping the ante. And I remember many times they had a big whiteboard in the office of Mason Brand Entertainment, the show, the people that were producing it. And I'd walk in and look at this whiteboard and say, man to feed shark with chainmail glove on. And I'd go, but what about if the shark goes up to his elbow? He's going to swallow the chainmail glove and his forearm. Like, what? Really? Anyway, yep, we went up the bloody barrier reef and out we there was feeding sharks with a very small chainmail glove on. I'll never forget that. But it was an amazing show. And look, I'm still in contact with Tanya Zayeta. We're great friends. And she's got twins now, and I've got 27-year-old triplets. So I don't know if there was something in the water at Who Dares Wins, but we've had multiple births. Gladiators was hilarious. Gladiators was so physical that people got injured every time we filmed, but you didn't know that. The crowd didn't know that. But it was physical, it was tough. And again, at the cutting edge of reality TV, and I'm very, very humbled to have been at the start. But Sydney Weekender, what a job for a diehard New South Wales, Sydney-born blue bagger to host a show where you just get to travel around New South Wales for 27 years and see our amazing state. And it is an amazing state. We've got rainforest, desert, temperate climate, snow, absolutely everything in this state that you can see, and it's amazing.
Well, you put a smile on our faces, certainly since your playing career and also in your playing career, mate. Thanks so much for being our Friday legend this morning.
Jared, it's been a great ride, mate. Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you, Lars, and all the best, pup.
Good on your win.
See you, buddy.
See you, boys.
Now, we had the Davis Cup last night, and I don't believe it was a great start for the Aussies. No, they were beaten 3-0 by Croatia in their first tie over there. So Alexi Poprin was beaten, and Alex de Minaur was beaten as well, and then we lost in the doubles. So not a great start for the Aussies over there for the Davis Cup overnight. Lots of texts here. Mike Whitney. I mean, he is a Friday legend, if ever there's
one. He's a legend.
Some of these, Lozza and Pup. Morning, boys. That was the best interview I've ever heard, and I've been listening for decades. Simply inspirational. Rosie from Cootamundra. We need Whit to come back to Port Macquarie to do another weekend show. Remember him, Dougie, playing to his cup, Oxley Oval, and Viv putting one on the nearby beach, says KO at Port Macquarie. What, Mike Whitney is far more than a legend. How good was that? JFG. Without doubt, the best interview and the best bloke you've ever had on. Mike Whitney, legend, brilliant interview. Matt at Coffs, one of the best interviews ever. Rice Man, they continue. The Stroud Raider, sending his thoughts in as well. What a terrific guest Whit is. Took me back to my childhood. The names he rattled off, the backstory of them all, just incredible. Oz cricket has taken a bit of a whack of late. Whit reminds us all why Australian cricket is so incredible. Great show. Good on you, the Stroud Raider. Absolutely. I mean, the legacy from people like Whit, and particularly through the 80s and 90s.
Well, I said to you players, when we went off air, you know, it's funny, isn't it? You've got an interview for 20, 30 minutes. And again, Whit's another one that the interview goes so quickly. We've got a lot more stuff we wanted to ask him about. We just didn't have time.
Didn't scratch the surface.
Didn't have time.
You know, the thing I love about Whit, and I've always said the same thing about Warnie, what you see is what you get. So when you hear him talk there on radio, he's been exactly the same from the day I met him. You can feel his passion for the Rabbitohs. You can feel his passion for Randwick cricket, for New South Wales cricket, for playing for Australia. And that's exactly what he has always been like. He's just an absolute jet. He's such a great fella. And I tell you, Randwick Petersham, good on them for keeping him involved. What did he say, 21 years he's been president?
Yep.
You're not finding a better club president than Mike Whitney. Like, you can see he is that passionate.
And been involved with the Bunnies for a long time as well. He's just South
Sydney. He was
part
of the Bunnies with their reinstatement.
Yep, he was.
He led the charge there, along with a number of other people, with George Piggins. But Whit was there in solidarity with them all. And you're right, Pup. Every time you run into Whit and you see him,
the same, mate.
He's one of those blokes that he's always got a smile on his face. And when you're in his company, you actually feel alive and you're up and about and you know you're going to have a laugh. You know you're going to have a laugh and a good time.
Tell you what he was, Loz, as a cricketer. So tough. You speak to anyone that played with him and, mate, the pain he put his body through.
He had bad knees, didn't he? Or a
mate,
bad knee.
I should have asked him. I'd be surprised if he walked out onto a cricket field feeling 100% ever. He always had a niggle, always had pain. His body was going through hell, yet you couldn't get him off the field. You couldn't take the ball out of his hand.
You know, Whit and I had something in common, Clarkey. You just reminded me.
Both left arm quicks.
Have a guess what he used to wear.
Oh, he had the quad, the thermo skin.
And the knee.
That's who I see. Instant connection. The Thermo brothers.
I remember he always pulling it up.
Love it.
He always used to pull that thermo skin up. Put it on the knee and away he'd go, running into bowl. Oh,
you know, back then as well, I remember, you know, Whit or Bruce Reid, or the fact it was a left arm quick. Like, we didn't have that many left arm quicks back then in anything, first class cricket or international cricket. So that was different. And I feel like that was such a, you know, a Whit thing as well, that everything he has touched, he has stood out. Like, we talk about players, that transition between playing sport at the highest level and getting into business. Whit was successful. He did it. He moved straight into television and smoked it.
Yeah.
Everything he's touched, he's had success with.
How funny was Gladiators?
Oh, right. And what about him saying that? I'm like, I want to murder him, because he did. He started reality TV.
Yeah, he did.
Like, mate, you're causing this grief.
Now, how can we re-listen on the text line as well? So wherever you get your podcasts, you can go to bigsportsbreakfast.com.au, but wherever you get your podcasts, just search Big Sports Breakfast, and it's available now. The interview is there. In fact, the whole show will be there as well. at the end after Jono gets it up there at the end of the show. But that interview is there now for Mike Whitney if you missed out. You'll be able to get the next interview on the podcast as well. Robbie, good morning to you.
Good morning, boys. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're very well. Now, tell us about Manchester United set to appoint 63-year-old German Ralf Rangnick as interim manager on a six-month contract. Tell us about Ralf.
Well, there's not much I can tell you. I don't know much about him, but he's got a lot of experience, and it sounds a pretty wise move considering they can't get who they want at the moment. That's obvious what's going on. They want Pochettino, and they can't get him at the moment. So I think it's wise to go and appoint someone of experience who's had nothing to do with the club. I think that's important. In the past, since Sir Alex Ferguson left, they've gone for, if you remember, Ryan Giggs was caretaker. At the moment, we've got Carrick. Solskjaer was a caretaker before he was given the job itself. So they've always gone internally. So I think this is a wise move.
Robbie, it just shows you how far Man United have fallen, though, hasn't it? Because if you're saying like they can't get who they want, that would have been a dream job that everyone would have fallen over themselves to get.
Oh, look, Laurie, I think they still, yeah, well, they still are. I mean, lots of managers want the United job, but it's just about who's available. You know, Pochettino's coaching Paris Saint-Germain without a get-out clause. So, you know, obviously that switch, Zidane going to PSG and Pochettino maybe potentially moving to United just can't happen. But, oh, yeah. I mean, licking their lips, managers, to get the United job. And this one coming in as a caretaker, if he does well, they'll give it to him, possibly. So, yeah, look, strange times at United. But to be fair, they've been strange times. And I know it was 2013, last time they won the title and the last time Sir Alex was in charge. But it just seems like it's been in turmoil since he left. And in some ways, I think it has been.
How much slack, Robbie, does the new coach get? Like, what with, you know, in with such a major team like this, do you get, you know, do you get a couple of years? Do you get six months? How's it work?
Well, he's got 6 months. And if he does well, he might get an extension.
Okay.
But if it just goes, let's say he does average. They're not disastrous, not great. They'll probably let him go. And this six-month appointment smells of something they've got already arranged in the pipeline. Okay. Maybe Pochettino can leave at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And maybe they get him that way. But, yeah, it looks somewhat strange. But, look, it's done. And they did get a fantastic win in the Champions League. Away to Villarreal. No one gave him any hope. Ronaldo, again, scored to keep up his record of scoring in every Champions League game this season so far. So that's one bright spot in what has been a pretty bleak month for Manchester United.
Can they turn it around on Monday against Chelsea?
Oh, Chelsea, they demolished Juventus 4-0 in the Champions League yesterday. They're unstoppable at the moment, but you know what? I've just got a funny feeling. I don't think United will win at Stamford Bridge, but I think they'll get a draw. And I think it'll be, I think there'll be goals in it because Chelsea is scoring for fun. But an interesting stat come up, and this is why I think they might get a draw. United have won on their last three visits. In their last four visits, they've won three times at Chelsea. And Chelsea haven't beaten United for seven Premier League games. So I'm going to go for a draw in that, in what is the match of the round.
Closer to home in the A-League, Luke Bratton, Sydney FC midfielder, out for the season. ACL in the FFA Cup against Sydney Olympic the other night. What does that mean for the Sky Blues?
Well, that's a blow. That's the engine room. So, you know, one game played and an FFA Cup game. Yeah, that's disastrous news for Sydney FC. He is key in the midfield for Sydney, and for him to be taken out for the whole of the season is a massive blow.
The Matildas tomorrow. Well, they've got a big couple of games. The USA, the back-to-back world champs, tomorrow in Sydney and Tuesday night in Newcastle. I guess the focus really has to be their defence, doesn't it, Robbie, in this next couple of games to really lay a marker down for improvement there heading towards the Asian Cup.
Yeah, and defence has been a problem. I thought...
Alana Kennedy is key at the back there, the Manchester City player, and a lot of the players playing in England are very, very well known now. Razzo and Caitlin Ford and Steph Catley and, of course, Sam Kerr, who's topping the charts yet again. She's on 9 goals in the FA Women's Premier League. And look, I think for Gustafsson, you know, the record isn't great. You know, over the 14, 15 games or so he's been in charge, they've only won, I think, 3 or 4. So, USA aren't at full strength. Nowhere near, in fact. It's a mixture of experienced players and some young up-and-coming players. So, I think the Matildas are clear favourites. And with Sam Kerr in such goal-scoring form, I think they're specials to win both these games.
Can you steer me into a couple of winners in the Premier League over the weekend?
Laurie, I can always try and help my son.
What have we got?
Well, I just told you about, I'd stay away from Chelsea United. I've got a feeling that's going to be a draw. Chelsea are favourites. Of that, there is no doubt. But I just think that those recent stats...
$3.90 for a draw. Yeah. Beautiful.
What is it?
$3.90 for a draw.
Yeah, so it's good odds because Chelsea are firm favourites. I think Arsenal specials to beat Newcastle at home. Same for Liverpool at home to Southampton. There's a good start for a potential multi. I've got Norwich, who got a win under their new manager last week, Dean Smith, formerly of Aston Villa, only a week before, actually, got sacked, and he picked up the job at Norwich. I got them to draw at home to Wolves. Villa under Steven Gerrard to win at Crystal Palace. Brighton to beat Leeds, who are definitely sliding down the table. I've got a draw between Brentford and Everton. City, there's another one for your multi. I think specials at home, although West Ham did win this morning in their Europa League game, and they're in pretty good form, but they did lose to Wolves last week, so I've got City too strong at home. Leicester to beat Watford. Burnley to lose against Spurs. Conte got his first win for Spurs last week. And as I said, Chelsea United 2-2. I know they're all favourites, but if you're looking for a surefire multi, which of course it doesn't exist, but I'd put Arsenal, Leicester, Liverpool and Manchester City into a multi and see what you come up with. Probably won't be that long, but it might be a nice little learner.
Love it, Robbie. You've made your case. Comprehensive. Thank you.
Good on you, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, fellas. We've got 3 Sticky Wings packs to give out for those people who made the best cases for their horses tomorrow, who called earlier this morning. So, Gary, who pumped up Space Boy tomorrow in the Starlight Stakes, Laurie. He's a winner. Happy with that?
Happy with that. This is your quiz, Minnow.
Oh,
your competition.
Oh, is it?
No responsibility from me.
Now, definitely Craig, who nominated Spanish Mission, being Bossy's last ever ride.
I give him that.
So Craig is a winner. And Alan, in the Festival Stakes... And we got a text from the Brutality Boys before as well, who were very glad that you didn't put it in your multi. But Alan made a very strong case for Brutality in the Festival Stakes tomorrow and gave some good advice to Loz along the way in how to pick his horses. And Adam Pengilly also tipped Brutality as his value play. So Alan, Craig and Gary, the 3 winners. You got some Sticky Wings. What have we got? The pool beef here in front of us, Loz. There's a few other flavours as well. You're getting a pack anyway. And Sticky Wings will be available in your IGAs as well. But there are your 3 winners this morning. Dave Stanley, good morning to you.
Yeah, morning. You know, gee, the boys, were they not happy with your decisions there? Loz went very quiet.
Nothing. I give it nothing. Pup. No, yeah, I don't judge. It's a hard to pick. So whoever Minnow goes with, I back his judgment. I don't give him grief.
How about Loz? Nah, not my. This is not my show, mate. You're you choose.
I've got nothing to do with this, Dave. I don't want to get involved in something.
Does that mean that you would have chosen different people, Laurie?
Or possibly.
Okay.
Oh,
there you go.
Possibly. Well, who would you have chosen?
No. It's your quiz. It's your little.
I back
little
you,
baby,
Mido. Good choices, Mido. Oh, good choices,
I've got
buddy.
Your back. Just is worry it? About that. I've got your back.
Just sounds like it.
Just think.
Might have chosen someone
right?
else, but yeah, I've got your back.
I'm solid, mate. I'm solid. I'm as solid very as a lemonade good. Sandwich.
Very, very good. So what was the general consensus, boys, in terms of your picks for the weekend? In fact, what was your double, Loz? I haven't seen your double this morning.
Melbourne Race 1, number 6, Ebb Ha to win.
Yes, good money for it too.
And Sydney Race 5, number 8, Irish Angel to place.
Okay. Does it like the wet?
Yes. Okay. Loves Irish the wet.
Angel. Irish Collet, Angel. Jay Collet.
Jay Collet. First See, up. Wallet. Look at its wet track form distance.
Yeah, okay. Beautiful. Yeah. And what was that? How much was that, Middo?
$10.
Yeah, $9.
What was $10?
It's $9.
$9 I trimmed now. It. He got a bit nervous, did he? I started to make him shake.
How do you go in the wet, DS? You any good in the wet?
Mate, all conditions. Mate,
really?
I'm a Colin McRae, the rally okay. driver. Just send me anywhere.
Like it.
Just go.
Like it.
So, we've lost Muswellbrook, boys. Unfortunately, what about some of the pictures to come out of Scone? And I mean, look, it's not anywhere near the flooding that we're seeing around regional New South Wales, and as we've been saying all week, and we're going to say probably all summer, just stay safe wherever you are. It's going to be pretty nasty. But a lot of localised flooding in Scone and the Hunter, so we've lost Muswellbrook, unfortunately. We've got a track inspection tonight at Canterbury, or a track inspection for Canterbury tonight, 11 o'clock. So fingers crossed we can be racing at Canterbury tonight. We are racing in the nation's capital today. And all over Australia. So, but yeah, it's just playing havoc. We lost some meetings from Queensland during the week. We didn't have Doomben. And from that meeting up there too, that Gold Coast meeting, which is sort of the start of their summer carnival, that's in a bit of jeopardy with nearly 80 mil of rain falling at the Gold Coast last night into this morning. So let's hope we can get some races on and back some winners, boys.
Just had a text, Young Trots, they're off as well today.
Yeah. So
get rid of this rain.
I tell you what, it could be an interesting morning on Sky Sports Radio if these meetings are dropping off. It could just be ring in and maybe. Actually, Loz, what are you doing mid-boarding? Could we get you back as like a Dr. Love? People want to ring in with advice or something.
No, that's great.
He's got to go. He's on 106.5. Love Song Dedications. He's busy, mate.
I'm available. I'm available. I love taking
available?
Counselling calls.
Yeah, I think that we should do that one time.
Mentor. You're a mentor, Daly.
Yeah.
Experience, Michael. Experience, it's called.
And this morning, by the way, how about this, boys? You want to be listening to the punters panel. The reason being, apart from obviously tipping winners every week, but no Luke Marlow this week because he was meant to be calling Muswellbrook today. So with the transportation, he couldn't do it. And now he's got a free day. So he's out. Too good, Marlow.
So but, what do you mean transportation?
Driving. He was going to be driving up there this morning. So he wouldn't have been able to be on
Can't
the show.
Can't he have the cans on in the car and...
No. Actually, these form blokes, mate, they've got the analysis and everything.
Yeah,
they've
okay.
got to focus. But so, Pup, I don't know. Actually, yeah, you were there Melbourne Cup week. So I rang a bloke called Blake Johnston, who is Malcolm Johnston's son. Very good judge, runs the leg up Australia. And I said, Blake, Marlo's out. Do you want to jump in? And he said, mate, I've actually got my little baby boy. I'm looking after him tomorrow. Ring the old man. I said, what miracle? Would he come on the punters panel? Mate, locked in. So we rang Miracle yesterday. He said he'd love to come on. He's doing the form for all the Sydney races. So next half an hour
Legend.
At 9:30 could be anything. Glenn
Mate,
Munsey.
He tipped a couple of winners, Dave, when we had him on a couple of weeks ago. We had him on 2 or 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
I think he tipped a winner on every day.
So we've got Glenn Munsey, Chris Roots, and Malcolm Johnston as our punters panel today. So could be anything.
Wind him up. Wind the miracle up.
Yeah, we will. Brett Devine's going to join us from the ATC because we'll check in with Canterbury tonight. Plus next week, boys, officially, I think you'll find that Wink Stand's going to be opening and then Villiers Day, we'll be able to experience that Wink Stand at Randwick. So I hope this real wet weather doesn't affect any extra construction they have to do. But,
2 minutes past nine, don't
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, fellas. You're doing a bit of overtime, you boys.